Thank you very much, Mark. And next we'll have Jill Lloyd. Jill.
I plan to talk today about two related aspects of Kirchner's work, costume and theatre, which reach a magnificent climax in his Berlin street scenes. I will begin with Kirchner's textile designs, which are crucial to his concept of theatrical space. Secondly, I will look at how he uses dress to modernise and eroticise his figure paintings. And finally, I will attempt to show how these two themes come together in the Berlin street scenes, paying special attention to Five Women on the Street and Potsdamer Platz. The first part of my talk is called Dressing the Room. Because Kirchner's earliest interest was in clothing space rather than people. As an architectural student in Dresden in the early years of the 20th century, he came into contact with the latest ideas concerning decoration and interior design. In his Dresden studio, Kirchner used painted wall hangings and curtains that you can see on your left, inspired by Indian temple decorations and exotic cabaret acts. This is a contemporary photograph of a cabaret act where a dancer would pose behind a screen to give a silhouette, which I'm comparing to details in the decorations. To transform his small, dingy studio into an exotic Aladdin's cave, shot through with references to sexuality. The nude couples cavorting in the wall hangings retell the story of the nudist bathing trips that Kirchner and the other Brucker artists made with their girlfriends and models to the Moritzburg lakes outside Dresden during the summer months. Both in the studio and in nature, nudity and sex represented a creative, liberating force for Kirchner that flew in the face of his bourgeois upbringing. Throughout the Dresden and Berlin years, Kirchner enthusiastically visited local cabaret and circus acts. These popular performances informed his ideas about theatrical space. You can see in the ambitious studio painting on your right how he relocated his experiences of cabaret to the studio, complete with curtains, side wings, and backdrops. The theatricality of the painting has to do both with its decorative space and with the drama or suspended narrative implicit in the figure scene. Note the strange mask-like presence of the right-hand figure within the spectacle, of a voyeur within the spectacle, who adds to the narrative tension. I'm talking about this figure here. Kirchner's own photographs of life in the studio show that it was used not just as a place to live and create art, but also as a space for performance. This photo of his Berlin studio, contemporary to the street scene paintings, shows Kirchner's girlfriend Erna Schilling in a fashionable dress and hat, watching another friend, Hugo Bielowons, dancing nude in the studio. In contrast to that wild bohemian image, a second photograph of Kirchner's studio in Berlin displays a petit bourgeois order introduced by the flowers on the table and Erna's neatly embroidered textiles after Kirchner's designs. Like many working class young women of the period, Erna cobbled together a living as a seamstress and a part-time dancer. Girls in this position sometimes supplemented their meagre earnings with prostitution. Erna's sister Gerda, who models alongside her in the Berlin street scenes, may have resorted to this, as we know that she eventually died from syphilis in 1923. Despite the disorder of her lifestyle, Erna apparently strove to create a theatre of bourgeois tidiness in the studio. Like the tapestries Kirchner designed in later years, her embroideries cross the boundary between fine and applied art. In this sense, they are perhaps comparable to contemporary productions by the Wiener Werkstatter. In 1916, Kirchner reaffirmed his interest in embroidery by designing three woodcut illustrations for an exhibition in Bremen of dresses and accessories from Irena Eucken's embroidery workshop. Frau Eucken was a prominent figure in the German fashion world, married to a member of Kirchner's circle of patrons at the University of Jena. The elegant woman in Kirchner's woodcut illustration wears clothes similar to those sported by the streetwalkers in his paintings, complete with a hobble skirt, which was a style that was popularized in Berlin in 1910 by an exhibition of the French designer Paul Poiret. These were skirts that made it very difficult to walk, so they were called hobble skirts. Kirchner moved beyond the private theatre of the studio into public spaces with his textile designs for the 1912 Sonderbund and 1914 Werkbund exhibitions in Cologne. The first, on your left, involved a 4-metre-high Madonna executed on Hessian wall hangings in a mixed technique of painting and printing that Kirchner described as batik, probably because melted wax was applied to the cloth. The Madonna decorated an expressionist chapel, flooded with coloured light through stained glass windows designed by the Dutch artist Jan van Prikker. The setting was a major international exhibition of modern art, and the chapel, designed by Kirchner and his Brucker colleague Erich Heckel, represented the spiritual, gothic aspirations of expressionism, which were popular themes at the time. 2 years later, Kirchner returned to Cologne to carry out a more secular commission, a mural in felt appliqué that formed the backdrop for a display entitled Art in the Tobacco Trade, sponsored by Joseph Feinhals, a prominent tobacco merchant in Cologne. These two decorative projects reflect, I think, a nascent schism in expressionism. On the one hand, purists like Herwart Walden, the influential editor of the expressionist journal Der Sturm, insisted that art should serve the spirit and keep a strict distance from commercial activities like fashion, advertising, and decoration. But there was also a rising faction that advocated the popularization of expressionism through its involvement with the commercial decorative arts. In 1915, the editor of the magazine Zeit Echo went so far as to promote fashion illustration alongside fine art because he explained, "Today fashion seems to be the area in which art and life are most intimately linked." In his public decorative projects, Kirchner seems to straddle the spiritual and commercial aspirations of expressionism. The next section of my talk is called Modernity and Eroticism. Because the Brucker artists associated nudity with freedom of expression, with regeneration, and an attack on bourgeois conventions, the nude was the essential core ingredient of their art. Nevertheless, they aimed to replace the ideal, classical, timeless nude of the past with a living, breathing, pulsating nude who was very much a creature of the present. Partly, this was a question of style, but in Kirchner's Dresden paintings, we find that he also uses costume to modernize and eroticize his nudes. Naked Woman with a Hat, 1907, is usually interpreted as Kirchner's tribute to Lucas Cranach's Venus, and thus an early instance of his desire to align himself with the Gothic Germanic tradition. However, the painting also relates very consciously to Baudelairean paintings of modern life like Manet's Olympia, as Sherwin showed us. Kirchner did his own sort of burlesque version of Olympia later on. Presented in front of the theatrical studio curtains, Kirchner's nude is all the more sexy and modern for the fashionable accessories of her hat and red slippers that offset her nudity. And obviously there are details in the painting which very closely relate to Olympia. Kirschner's favourite model at this time was his girlfriend, Doris Grosser, who you see in this photograph with Kirschner. Notably, he is wearing the costume of the Baudelairean flâneur, or dandy, with the dark suit and bowler hat worn by all the men in his Berlin street scenes. Doris, or Dodo, as Kirschner nicknamed her, was a milliner. In fact, her business in Dresden was so successful that she refused to move with Kirschner to Berlin in 1911. Dodo is often shown wearing extravagant hats that obviously have an erotic association for Kirschner, for example, half-length, nude with a hat. Nude with a feather hat. If we need proof of his interest in the erotic aspects of dress, we need look no further than his 1915 sequence of lithographs depicting various fetishes. The glove fetishist features alongside the breast fetishist. Now, it's rather difficult to see what's going on here. You almost need to put on your glasses. But basically, in the front here, I think you can see that the girl is wearing black stockings and frilly underwear, very much like the dancers in the Hamburg dancers' drawing of pen and ink drawing of 1910, I'm showing on the other side, reminding us that the racy cabaret acts Kirschner witnessed in Dresden and Berlin, and the dancers' deliberately titillating costumes provide a theatrical subplot that underlies many of his figurative scenes. This is the glove fetishist, by the way, and this is the breast fetishist. After Kirschner's move to Berlin, the playful element of eroticism that characterizes his depictions of Dodo in her hats is eclipsed by a more extreme, edgier kind of sexuality. The model's costumes become more brazenly provocative, and often a male presence materializes inside the scene, introducing an explicit sexual tension. In The Judgment of Paris, 1913, one of Kirschner's rare references to a mythological theme, many of the characteristics we would normally associate with costume in painting, color, pattern, texture, are relegated to the surrounding studio space. While in contrast, the figures, or the modern graces inside the painting, are bleached of colour, with their feet rooted to the circular rug plinth in the foreground of the painting, they are more like life-size versions of Kirschner's wooden sculptures than living women. The faces of the three graces, like the woman in Couple in a Room, belong to Erna Schilling, by this time Kirschner's partner and favourite model, and there is clearly an autobiographical dimension to the male-female confrontations in these scenes. The latter painting suggests a prostitute with her client. The woman's costume reveals rather than conceals her body, and you can see the man is touching its transparent silk hem rather than the woman's flesh. Historians of Expressionism have convincingly argued that Kirschner's new circle of literary friends in Berlin, including the writer and medical doctor Alfred Döblin and the Expressionist poets, had an impact on the mood and subjects of Kirschner's Berlin paintings. The theme of the brothel that enters Kirschner's work in 1913-14, the years when he painted his street scenes, certainly relates to woodcut illustrations he made for an unpublished one-act play by Döblin entitled Comtesse Mizzi, which is set in a brothel. I am showing a contemporary drawing by Kirschner, Bordello, 1913, where you see a typical opposition of a barely dressed woman and a fully clothed man. Beneath, I've inserted a photograph of Erna Schilling watching Hugo Bielavon's dancing to remind us that sex for sale in the brothel is a direct inversion of the nude, clothed gender relationships that exist in the creative space of the studio. In in Der Sturm, Döblin published an article in 1912 on the theme of virginity and prostitution, where he emphasized the theatrical role played in society by the prostitute or the cocotte, whom he describes as an impresario of love. I quote, "Asexual in nature, she acts out sexual relationships. The illusion is that she has many relationships. In fact, she has none." Kirchner was certainly engaged by the literary avant-garde's ideas about sex and theatre. In 1913, he made these woodcut illustrations for a pantomime programme by the young expressionist poet Hans Reimann, apparently presenting a burlesque drama of love and despair. Kirchner's interest in theatre, masquerade and pantomime fed, as I now hope to show, directly into his depictions of the Berlin streets. The third part of my talk is called window dressing. Expressionist scholars, and particularly in relation to what I'm talking about today, Shervin Simmons, have written very convincingly about how Kirchner's foray into the city led him into an arena of public debate about how modern urban experience impacted on traditional social structures. Law, order, and morality were having a hard time keeping up with the pace of social change in Berlin. Under completely different conditions in the mid-19th century, brothels and open solicitation in the streets had been banned in Prussia. The Berlin police force strictly enforced this policy, motivating both prostitutes and their clients to assume strategies of role-playing and disguise. The writer Hans Oswald, who published an evocative description of Berlin and its inhabitants in 1911, pointed out that it was often difficult to tell the ladies of the night from other elegantly dressed women, apart from a few telltale signs like their hats and their heavy makeup. "The hat," he wrote, "is usually the showpiece. The face is painted calcium white, cheeks, ears and chin have been reddened with a soft brush, lips teem with a greasy crimson sheen. Around the eyes, thick borders have been drawn by a black makeup pencil." I was just putting this on to create a little of the atmosphere of the street in Berlin. Fashion became a focus for the discussions about female identity, not least because a new generation of consumers in the fast-growing capital city were creating a buoyant market for women's clothes. Berlin's first live fashion show was held at the Hotel Kaiserhof in October 1910, followed the next day by a presentation of Paul Poiret's designs at the Hermann Gerson fashion store. In themselves, these fashion shows offered a new kind of theatrical experience. Apparently, Poiret brought slender French models with him from Paris, who paraded in a blue temple created by fabrics draped from the walls. And I'm showing you some contemporary photographs, 1911 designs of Poiret's clothes, a slightly later illustration from the 1920s, which creates this kind of theatrical effect for the presentation of the clothes, and the exhibition in the Metropolitan Museum last year, which I think was trying to evoke some of the sort of theatrical effects of the fashion show. In conservative circles, the worst excesses of women's fashion, as they were thought of at the time, were associated with an invasion from Paris. And even expressionist publications like Die Waisenblätter voiced doubts about the wisdom and morality of the new fashion displays. In 1914, the writer Walter Krug commented, "The showings themselves risked excess in every matter. However, ladies of society, under gentlemen's eyes, observed such excesses with a look, or what is the same, an acted look, which seemed to cynically give away the final remnant of that which raised the lady over the demi-monde." Other writers concentrated on the immoral consequences of advertising women's fashions in window displays that were bound, in their opinion, to corrupt young women passers-by. In the words of Norbert Stern, whose book Fashion and Culture was published in 1915, I quote, It is a prostitute who offers herself to the passers-by in the brilliantly lit shop windows, dressed in no more than a corset. A contemporary newspaper article complained that such sexually charged window displays were creating a new kind of Berlin girl who practiced a sexual freedom that was previously known only among prostitutes. Kirchner's models and girlfriends like Doris Grosser and Erna Schilling might well be considered the kind of girl they had in mind. I'm showing two works on paper by Kirchner, a small pencil sketch done on the spot, and a more fully worked pastel drawing from 1914 that can be read as virtual illustrations of these contemporary debates about window dressing, obviously showing a corseted window model. Five Women on the Street, which is usually considered the first in the street scene series, continues to engage with the subject of display. But in this instance, Kirchner creates a far more disturbing effect by crossing the boundary between what is inside and outside the shop window. The women are pictured on a street corner looking into a shop window on the right, from which there emanates an electric green light. But they are also representations of the mannequins inside the window, striking catwalk poses to display both their charms and the latest feathered hats and figure-hugging dresses worn both by prostitutes and by fashion-conscious young women. On your right, I'm showing a photograph of the 1913 Spring Fashions published in the Illustrated Berlin newspaper. Sorry, this slight model here is what I want. In my mind, something more troubling is going on than simply turning the women into commodities. Indeed, Kirchner has fused the commodity with the consumer, or to put it in theatrical terms, the spectacle and the spectator. The women are subversive hybrids incorporating fashion mannequin, streetwalker, and shopper, facets of female identity that make an explosive combination. In comparison, August Macke's contemporary painting, on your right, Fashion Shop, shows a serene world of unquestioned boundaries. Here, the glass panes that separate the window display from the street are firmly in place, and the bourgeois women shoppers peruse an array of colourful and essentially harmless wares. Kirchner also fuses contrasting modes of representation in Five Women on the Street. On the one hand, it displays the soaring forms and elongated figures associated with Kirchner's Gothic style, evident, for example, in the Madonna he made for the 1912 Sonderbund Chapel. As we saw, this was the style associated with the spiritual aspirations of Expressionism. On the other hand, Five Women is clearly influenced by commercial fashion illustrations, like this page from a 1913 women's magazine. The mannered poses and circular composition are similar, although Kirchner replaces the harmonious orbit of gesture and glance with a much more disparate and fractured composition. The women's attention is divided between the window and the street. By crossing the boundaries between high and popular art, Kirchner creates a peculiar hybrid of the sacred and the profane. To some extent, this duality extends into the colour symbolism of the women's costumes. In Berlin's street scene, the two women at the centre of the composition, modelled by Erna and Gerda Schilling, wear red and blue, colours traditionally associated with the whore and the Madonna. And of course, red cocotte on the other side reaffirms this link in Kirchner's mind between red and the prostitute. In their extravagant feathered hats, though, Kirchner inverts the colour code. Red in blue and blue in red. Perhaps to suggest that in the masquerade of the modern street, all is not what it seems. Costume can be used to switch identity and as a disguise. When Kirchner went out onto the streets of Berlin, he constructed a vision of the city that was essentially theatrical. Take Berliner Alliansplatz, 1914. In comparison with an archive photograph, which Mark already showed us, of the plaza with its peace column, you can see how Kirchner compresses and tips up the urban scene to create, I think, a backdrop effect. While the arcaded buildings to the sides of his composition are like the wings in a stage set. In the Berlin street scenes, Kirchner uses props like the car wheel, the headlight, the number of a bus to evoke the city. But only in Potsdamer Platz does he construct a full-scale architectural stage set for his urban performance. In this grand climax to the series, Kirchner pulls together his ideas about the city as a stage and costume as a signifier of identity and disguise. This time, Erna and Gerda are drawn on a human scale, stalking like models on the catwalk and separated from the backdrop of the city and rows of male predators by the pedestal traffic island in the foreground plane, which is cut off at the bottom edge to bring them closer in confrontation into the viewer's space. In the coloured woodcut for the painting, the women are wearing blue and green dresses. But in the final painting, Gerda is clad in a black mourning gown, complete with the veil adopted by widows in Berlin whose husbands had been killed in the early months of World War I. And I'm showing you a photograph of Gerda in a veil that exists amongst Kirchner's photographic archive. Once again, these veils were worn by genuine war widows, who in fact were criticised in the contemporary press for their vanity, worrying about what they were wearing at the time when their husbands were dying, and by the city's prostitutes, who apparently thought the veils added a macabre frisson to their offers of sex. To conclude, Kirchner had a long-standing interest in costume and theatre, which he uses in the Berlin street scenes as a metaphor for the artifice and role-playing implicit in city life. Specifically, he uses costume to signify the shifting boundaries of female identity and the inherent threat this poses to modern man.
Thank you, Jill. And our final talk will be by Katerina Sikora. Katerina?
Thank you very much for the invitation, Debbie. My title evokes two recent films. Lucia Puenzo's XXY is about how a young person with physical characteristics of both sexes searches for an identity. The American television show and film Sex in the City, in turn, follow young women in their quest for success and sexual happiness in a modern-day metropolis. I would argue that sexual signs in Ernst Ludwig Kirchner's street scenes are similarly ambivalent. I will approach this ambivalence from two mutually enhancing perspectives. First, I examine the double structure of converging and expanding lines and brushwork the artist uses to accentuate the sex of the cocottes in his Berlin paintings, and the question of how this sexually coded structure corresponds to the basic forms of urban topography. I then trace the gestures of the women in the street to see how their hands conceal or emphasize their sex. The first line of inquiry thus examines how gender is formally structured in Ernst Ludwig Kirchner's street scenes, and the second looks at how gender is generated through gestures. Finally, I then ask what the implications of these two modalities of gender are for Kirchner's self-portrait. Part 1. Structuring gender, the city, and the modern Venus. In the city scenes he painted between 1913 and 1915, Ernst Ludwig Kirchner strove to visually capture a modern perspective marked above all by contradiction. His experience of how opposites collide in the metropolis of Berlin takes shape as a specific configuration of two motifs. These motifs are sort of configured as the interplay, as we have already heard many times today, of the cocotte and the street. By linking these elements, Kirchner was able to visually represent contradictory categories such as nature and art, dynamism and stasis, male and female. He employed a specific formal structure to join these opposites. In visual terms, this consists of two overlapping lines like an X or star shapes. In terms of syntax, it is a type of chiasmus, which means a crossover arrangement of elements that have opposite meanings but come together at their meeting point to mutually define each other. For Kirchner, this structure was already existent as a fundamental form in both the topological site and the dynamics of the German capital. Since the end of the 19th century, Berlin had been traversed by large boulevards that joined to form lively intersections. Potsdamer Platz was one of the best known of these star-shaped urban sites. Its particular topography made this major square one of the city's most dynamic locations. People and vehicles came together there in a concentrated mass and then scattered again into the many branching streets of the city. The structure of experience at these points of gathering and dispersal was marked by an extreme variety of movement and posed many challenges to the individual's motor and visual skills. The situation explains the countless attempts to transform the potential for irritation at these culminating points into a kind of new beauty. Bird's eye photos of Potsdamer Platz, as you see from the left, serve as a good example for this approach to visually mastering such challenges. By looking down at the streets, they transform the dynamic of opposing movement patterns on the street into an abstract structure, aesthetically tamed and optically comprehensible. When he first began to explore his urban environment in Berlin, Kirchner attempted to map these lines of force, as he named them. As a result, he repeatedly painted city squares from above, subjects demonstrating the typical movement of collision and expansion that defines the city's underlying structure. The work Neulendorfplatz, you see on the right, clearly illustrates what Eberhard Rothers meant when he wrote, quote, "Berlin urban painting is a picture of collision," end of quote. But Kirchner did not only employ this formal structure, so paradigmatic for the contradictory movements of the modern city, in his paintings of urban topography. It characterizes the female protagonist of his street scenes as well. This is particularly evident in his pastel Red Cocotte, which we have seen several times today. The entire image is built on contrasts in color, perspective, and tectonic structure. The contrast between blue and red separates the protagonist from the street as do the frontal view with which we see her and the more overhead angle on the crossroad. But at a single point, these contrasting elements meet and intersect. At the spot under the cocotte's flaming red dress, where her genitals are hidden, the lines of the sidewalk, the upper sidewalk, this line, and the lines of her gathered skirt subtly merge. This spot forms the focal point of the entire image. The staccato lineup of the tuxedoed men in the top hats unerringly progresses along the diagonal towards this vanishing point, and the gaze of the male figure in the left foreground points there as well. His stare seems to be directly fixed on the side of the cocotte's sexual organs, which appear astonishingly close and almost at his eye level. But what does our alter ego actually see, and what in turn do we see ourselves? The intersection of the lines of the street and of the gathered skirt do not exactly deliver what they promise. In any case, we certainly do not see female genitalia. This is how the contradictory structure of chiasmus unfolds as the movement of an ambiguous way of seeing. The lines that come together at the point where the female genitals are located simultaneously form a sign of their deletion. As the eggs, this crossing of lines, concentrates our gaze at the center of the city and the cocotte sexual organs, while at the same time covering them with a prohibitory symbol. This maneuver has a long cultural and artistic tradition. Since at least the 14th century, the power of Venus has been depicted with similarly ambivalent stagings of the sexual organs and viewers' gaze. In the Florentine Triumph of Venus, which you see here, rays emerge from the point where the female nude's vulva should be visible. Conversely, one could argue that the rays symbolize the glances that Venus's lovers direct towards her sexual organs. But even at the point in question, there's really nothing to see, no pubic hair, no vulva. This is no surprise. The gesture of shame with which the female figure hides her genitals has been passed down in the Western tradition from the sculptures of antiquity to the Renaissance and well into the art of the 19th and 20th century. Further, this gesture of shame of the hands comes to be written directly onto the female bodies in art over the centuries to seal and delete the sign of their sexes. You see the concealment very clearly here, I think. The Florentine Venus is an example of this second type, but she does not completely fulfill its conventions. Instead, she opens her arms in a priestly gesture, her hands spreading the mandorla, of which she is the center. The lancet shape, however, of the mandorla around her also recalls pre-Christian symbols of the vulva, and even in its sublimated Christian usage, the mandorla represented the gate of life and was a sign of Christ's incarnation. The Florentine Triumph of Venus fully demonstrates a chiastic structure in the star-like formation of the lines of sight and the paradoxical semantics of both showing and hiding the female sexual organs. We encounter this structure again in Kirchner's Pastel of the Cocotte. In Red Cocotte, Kirchner presents this contradiction on two pictorial levels. On the surface, the paradox emerges from the intersecting lines of force of the street and the lap of the cocotte's skirt. In terms of the image's depth, in turn, the ambiguity is due to the overlapping of various layers of color and line. But it is the interaction of both these surface and depth structures that generates the complex strategy of showing and not showing in Kirchner's painting. Thus, the point to which the eye is dynamically led by the converging lines is both blank and significant, because at a meter level, the same point of intersection that functions as a crossing out of the female genitalia simultaneously turns a spotlight on the desire in the male gaze. The layering of the pastel colors, in turn, produces a similarly paradoxical principle of transparency and also opacity. By allowing lines to show through under the surface color, Kirchner's painting makes us feel as if we can see through the Cocotte's clothing to her body below. But all we see there is the familiar X, the sign of prohibition and deletion. With Red Cocotte, Kirchner thus manages to represent the highly complex structure of the link between the modern city and modern sex with a single sign. Just as Berlin's prostitutes on the city's streets enacted a permanent flux of attracting glances and, to avoid the police, deflecting them again, Kirchner plays a clever game of showing and hiding in his street scenes with the Red Cocotte. By leading our glance, like those of the Cocotte's potential customers, along visible and invisible strings to the side of her genitals, where it concentrates and then scatters once again, he enmeshes us within the image's internal fabric of relations. At the same time, this movement makes the nexus of city, genitals, and gaze a reflexive one. City and prostitute thus do not simply form the, quote, setting of modernity, its stage and the site of its confrontations and encounters, end of quote. Instead, by overlapping them, Kirchner thematizes modern urban experience itself as a multi-layered dynamic contradiction. But in the structure of chiasmus, Kirchner has found more than just a formal hieroglyph for the clashing structures of the modern metropolis and the paradoxes of modern relations between the sexes. Through a chiasmus, he also observes the coping strategies of the city's inhabitants in the face of these contradictions. As Schlöer claims, quote, as an ensemble of challenges, the city both requires us to learn modern, appropriate behaviors and provides us with the means and ways for mastering these challenges, end of quote. Part two, gesturing gender, the complicity of gaze and hand. Much has been written about the structure of movement and vision the modern metropolis demands of its inhabitants. Even more exists about the interaction of paradigmatic urban figures, such as the elegant prostitutes and their admirers, that constantly shift between exhibition and camouflage. The habits and clothing of these street protagonists with their ambivalent signals of seduction and resistance have also been scrutinized. In contrast, comparatively little has been said about the specific gestures of the main characters in Ernst Ludwig Kirchner's street scenes. But what does the seemingly bizarre gesture of the central female figure in Kirchner's first large painting, Five Women on the Street, actually mean? Elbows bent away from her body, she crosses her hands, with us swathed with long gloves. The gesture seems detached from the rest of her body, but its position on the picture's central axis also makes it a key point of interest for the viewer. Although the five figures are shown from the front, in side view, and from behind, their tall silhouettes and restrained coloration has a homogenizing effect. Kirchner uses the artificial light of the street lamps to reduce the differences among the figures. The greenish-yellow circle of light not only illuminates the pavement, but also bleaches the color from the Cocotte's made-up faces and feather boas. The scene seems bathed in glaring spotlights, becoming a stage on which the ladies of the night parade before the viewer like the girls in a review. What then is the meaning of the gesture at the focus of his performance? Anyone who has ever worn long gloves, which might not be many among us, or seen Rita Hayworth in the film Gilda can guess. The cocotte is about to pull off the glove finger by finger. Or, alternatively, she is pushing down on the fabric at the spaces between her fingers to check whether the glove is in place. In either case, the gesture revolves around the ambivalences between potential bearing and elegant concealment. In other words, this gesture promises a performance of dressing and undressing. Kirchner's cocottes are positioned as if staged on a catwalk or pedestal in later works as well. And technical light heightens the artificiality of their clothing, hats, and painted faces. The city's artificial light and the cocottes' costumes combine in Kirchner's pictures, turning both the cocottes and the city into a surface that, in terms of both pigment and semantics, is densely layered. He thus portrays city and woman as accomplices who join forces to put themselves on display. The advantage the large paintings have over the drawings and prints is evident here. They place us before a stage on which the modern city and femininity are played out as art forms. But artificiality and theatricality always inspire a wish for a look backstage. It is here that the cocotte's hands play an important role. In a seemingly random staging of happenstance, they never fail to point explicitly to the site of their sex. The figure in the foreground of 1913's Berlin street scene gestures to her genitals with the thumb of her spread right hand, and in 1914's Potsdamer Platz on the right, the entire hand is cupped over the location of her sexual organs. These gestures function in a similar way to the formal structure of chiasmus described previously. They reveal something hidden and indicate the presence of something like a natural gender, an actual natural sex beneath the surface of an artificial urban femininity. In the Berlin street scene of 1913, on the left, both variations are present, enhancing this effect. The cocotte in a purple dress in the foreground on the left, who points ostentatiously at the site of her genitals, is paired with a companion in a dark-colored dress with pleats that meet at the point that covers her sexual organs, precisely in our chiastic form of an eggs. In addition to the obvious iconography of the cocottes and their customers, it is therefore possible to identify two further modalities of inscribing gender in Ernst Ludwig Kirchner's street scenes. The formal structuring principle of the eggs, in other words, of chiasmus, that mobilizes the gaze between the alternatives of focus and scattering, and demonstrations of gesture that promise to uncover something that nonetheless remains veiled. Third and last part, irritating gender, a new myth of the artist. Finally, I'm interested in how such ambivalent signs of gender in both their structural and gestural modalities manifest themselves in Ernst Ludwig Kirchner's concept of himself as an artist. Interestingly, none of the men in the major street scenes is shown making a significant gesture, except for the male figure commonly taken to be a self-portrait of Kirchner himself. If we follow the argument of Donald Gordon, who describes the man seen from the back at the center of the painting, I'm speaking now on the one on below, and the figure at the right with a cigarette, identified as Kirchner, if we follow Donald Gordon in what he's saying, that these two figures built a stroboscopic image, two successive images in time, two successive images of the same person, then it is possible to interpret the picture as follows. Kirchner's sort of double alter ego is leading us, that means the viewers, step by step into the stage set of the Berlin Street. This action is expressed by doubling the Kirchner figure to create a time sequence and further enhanced by the way the figure on the right turns his head and opens his hand towards us. Both actions address us directly as spectators. With his gesture, the Kirchner figure takes us by the hand to lead us over the lip of the stage, granting us an access to the artwork that the city and its women constitute. And with his glance, he invites us to observe this spectacle sort of from inside. In this way, the gestures of Kirchner's alter ego resemble those of the cocottes themselves. Just as the women seek to turn strolling men from mere observers into customers, the figure of the artist within the picture seeks to turn us from spectators in front of a pictorial stage into participants in what is happening in the picture. The basis of Kirchner's subsequent, regularly repeated equation of the artist with the prostitutes of Berlin thus becomes apparent just in this painting. But this identification of the cocottes is also pursued in other contexts. If we note, for example, that Kirchner signed Berlin's street scene at the spot directly under his alter ego's right hand, which you see here in the big image, we recognize that he has marked his hand as the hand of the artist, authorizing the picture as the author's own handiwork. The motif of the artist's hand, which draws on a long history art history, drawn to long tradition, becomes a sign of a double empowerment in Kirchner's figure's gesture. It describes both the seductive power of urban femininity and the creative power of the avant-garde artist to its author. But this concentrated potential already contains the seeds of its own opposite. And I come to my last pictures. And thus, the gendered space of urban topography and the demonstrative gesture of an erotic and artistic power take on a destructive potential in Kirchner's self-portrait as well. In 1915, after he signed on for combat service and suffered a breakdown, Kirchner portrayed himself as Peter Schlemihl, a character whose identity has been destroyed. In Schlemihl, or Kirchner's face, which you see on the left, lines intersect like the streets of Potsdamer Platz, traveled by blood-red streetcars, and distort his features. In self-portrait as a soldier on the right, the reversal of the authoritative gesture of erotic and creative potency into a sign of complete powerlessness is even more obvious. This reversal is accomplished through the symbolism of the severed right hand, the hand that once held the brush and invited us to enjoy the pleasure of watching the erotic spectacle of the city. However, if we fail to go beyond psychological interpretations that view the painting as a presentation of symbolic, sexual, or creative castration, we fail to recognize the chiastic structure at work, a structure in which abundance already contains loss, but destruction likewise leads to the recovery of the self. In a letter to his friend and supporter Gustav Schiefler from November 12, 1916, Kirchner wrote, quote, "We ourselves have become like the cocottes I painted, wiped away, disappearing the next time," end of quote. By equating himself with the city's cocottes, he claims the transitory nature of their existence as his own. but rather than culminating in the apocalyptic destructions of the self, this produces a new gesture of empowerment. Kirchner's letter thus continues, "However, I try to create a picture of the time from all this confusion, which is my task after all." End of quote. Thus, on the one hand, Kirchner took the forces he had represented as a structure of collision and dispersion in both the city's topography and the figure of the cocotte, and transferred them in rhetorical and visual terms to his self-portrait. But on the other hand, this move ultimately grants him an authority that can convert the destructive back into the creative. In painting his maimed sexuality and creativity, he emphatically accepts the dark side of his identification with the city and the feminine aspect of modernity, but at the same time, he transcends it, proving his ongoing creative power by the completion of this painting. By identifying with the city and the cocotte, with their chiastic structures and ambivalent gestures, Kirchner therefore translated the one-dimensional expressionistic gesture, one that transmits vital emotions in a linear movement from inside to outside, into a dialectical gesture. And in so doing, he created a new myth of the potent artist as someone who continuously regenerates himself from his own inherent contradictions. Thank you.